Blog Talk Radio.
Number one in the, no, it's no longer the BCS. So I guess if the college football rankings goes down this weekend, three huge deals in the baseball hot stove league, which according to Seth is definitely more exciting than the regular season or the playoffs. And Syracuse basketball is back at MSG this weekend, or this week, Thursday and Friday. And guess who's going to be sitting in the front row? That's this guy, the lucky guy with the trombone. Anyway, welcome to the Seth Show on Sports Radio Show.
I feel like I should have some theme music going with that. That was a nice 20-second opening. We don't usually do it that way.
Anyway, so yeah, we have a lot going on. Let's start off with the college football rankings because, I mean, we're going to start talking about baseball and you're going to probably go to sleep. So we might as well figure out what's going on
no,
there. Because
I will say I am actually absolutely baffled by the baseball deal. So we could talk about that a little bit later.
Wait, there were three of them.
Well, okay, I guess we can start with there was two, there was a trade and there were two signings. Correct.
So let's just start there. Okay, so which one are you baffled by?
I'm baffled by both signings. The idea of paying $325 million to a guy who, number one, is coming off a fit. That kind of injury, which has hurt people before, it brings me back to the Tony Conigliaro. Of course, I'm talking about Giancarlo Stanton, formerly Mike Stanton, of the Marlins, a team that has been on the verge of, I don't want to say bankruptcy, but on the verge of certainly frugal in every way possible over the last 5-10 years. And you sign a 13-year, $325 million contract. I don't even know where to start with this.
Well, let's break it down. So Giancarlo Stanton, who I still refer to as Mike Stanton very often, but Giancarlo Stanton had two more years until free agency. So he was a free agent after 2016. So he had two more years of basically arbitration. Okay. He had said that he wanted to stay in Miami. And if he wasn't going to stay in Miami, the Marlins could have gotten a whole heap of talent for him, no question about it. But the Marlins have never kept their guys, ever. They've traded away Hanley Ramirez. They've traded away Josh Beckett. The list goes on and on. Mike Lowell.
Miggy Cabrera.
Miggy Cabrera. Yes, Miggy Cabrera. Correct. So they've traded their guys. After the, I believe it was the 96 season, which they won the World Series. Is that correct?
No,
99.
Oh,
the
99
97, season.
97, excuse me.
97
in 2000, in 2003. Those are the two.
So 97 where they had Al Leiter, Alex Fernandez, yada, 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 and then Kevin Brown, and they sold off all those guys. So they signed Jose Reyes 2 years ago and Mark Burley, and last season they said sayonara to those guys too. So here they are looking for a face of the franchise because they just got a new stadium last year, 2 years ago, before the Jose Reyes signing. And they basically, every time they have a player, they ship him out. So they said, okay, we're going to keep this guy. This guy is the face of our franchise. And quite frankly, if you're going to pick a guy, it's not a bad guy to have. Okay? But, and there's a big but here, $325 million over 13 years. That's $25 million a season. So he is, I believe, the fifth highest paid player ever. If he hits 40 home runs and 100 RBIs for the next five seasons, he'll be 30 years old. Then he's got another eight seasons of that same contract, which basically he would have to hit 40 home runs and 100 RBIs to justify. I have a hard time with this, not because of the money. $25 million, A, it's not my money. And B, that's what he would have gotten on the open market. No question in terms. I don't have a problem with the money. I have a problem with 13 years. Who the heck gives 13-year contracts? Every contract that's been over 7 years, the teams have come to regret. And you could start talking about Mr. Rodriguez right across the pond.
Start talking with Rodriguez, and you can start talking about CC Sabathia. But even worse, for more of the small market teams, Joey Votto, $220 million. Joe Mauer, 8 years, $184 million. How are these teams doing? Troy Tulowitzki, 10-year, $158 million.
You realize, Seth, when you say Tulowitzki, 10 years and $158 million, that's still 3 years and 100 and, well, $150 million.
Almost $180 million less.
More.
For a better, if Tulowitzki's healthy, probably a better player.
I agree with that. Now, Grant, that was signed 3 years ago. So
yes.
There is some market correction, right? There's still some market correction. And the thing is, too, if you don't sign Stanton now, you basically have to trade him. Because his market value for trade is the best that it's been. But let's not end the contract there, because there are two more very important clauses in this contract, which boggle my mind even more. So the thing about the Marlins that they've always stood pat on is that they would not put no trade clauses in their contracts. So let's not give this guy $325 million over 13 years. But also we're going to go against our policy and put a no trade clause. Now, I understand from Giancarlo Stanton's mind that's something he would want to have. But if you're the Marlins and you're giving the most money ever, you have to get something back. I would think the no trade clause would be something you'd want. Nobody's going to deal for $28 million a year. But that's not all. That's not all, folks. The Marlins didn't get pillaged. They got tarred and feathered, too. Because after 6 years, guess what Giancarlo Stanton can do at age 31? He can opt out and start this whole ball rolling again. Shades of Alex Rodriguez, ladies and gentlemen. Except Alex Rodriguez was, I believe, 33 when he did it, or 34, and Giancarlo Stanton will be 31. Unbelievable!
You look at, this is a team that, the Marlins have been ranked, they're next to last in the National League in attendance in 14 of the last 16 years. They have a TV deal that pays them about $15 million a year. Jeffrey Loria has already said time after time he's not willing to go all out. So what exactly is this?
This is desperation. This is desperation. You're absolutely right. Desperation. Good word. I like it.
Thank you. So if anyone wants to call in and talk about this, and this will be kind of an open show. We're going to talk about this. We have some commentary on when is it good to give up on your home team, which was brought up by Evan from New York, one of our favorite listeners, and actually brought up also by Frank from Baltimore, ironically, today. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the other deals. We'll talk NFL, college football. It should be a fun show. So if anyone wants to call in, 760-283-0846. Now, the next deal, the Toronto Blue Jays, coming off a pretty disappointing year, signed a solid catcher, but a catcher that above average, yes, but not a superstar catcher, not an automatic all-star catcher, Russell Martin. Now, if he signed him $9-10 million, I understand. 5 years, $81 million. Explain this to me.
All right. So I actually looked at this and said, wow, because of the money. Not the years, because Martin's 31 years old. So do I think he can
catch? But he's also a catcher. He's also a catcher.
Wait. But he came up late. He didn't play a lot of games. And from what I understand and from seeing him, he is the most athletically gifted. He came up as a shortstop. So it's not like he was a catcher his whole career. So he's got less wear and tear on his body. And he might be able to move to another position. Now, I understand you're paying him as a shortstop, paying him as a catcher. I get it. Okay. So let's look at what the Blue Jays did. The Blue Jays have a very, very young pitching staff coming up. Okay, that Roy Halladay is gone. They have Mark Burley and a whole bunch of young guys. And what they looked at was that Russell Martin is very good with young pitching staffs. He frames the ball well. He tutors everybody from Pittsburgh says the same thing. Everybody from the Yankees says the same thing. That this guy is a great catcher. A catcher, not necessarily a hitter, but a catcher. His OPS was over 750 last year. Granted, he had a career year, but okay. The point is, if you don't sign Russell Martin, now they did have a very good catcher in Dionir Navarro.
Dionir Navarro.
Who had a WAR of 4.5 last year. Very good defensive catcher, a pretty good offensive catcher, who I think they will look to trade now. When you're the Toronto Blue Jays and you have the Rogers Center money behind you, there are not many. You're going to have to overpay. That's number one. You're going to have to overpay to get anybody as a free agent, okay? Because the Canadian dollar is less than the American dollar, yada, yada, yada. Canada's not exactly the nicest place to be for players. Maybe for me and you, not for baseball. So you have to overpay. It basically was, I think the money was going to be the same money no matter where he went. He was going to get 16 or 17 million. The concept was who was going to give him that fifth year. And the Blue Jays decided to give him the fifth year. And if they trade Dionir Navarro and get another spot back at a lower salary, I think you wipe that clean. I think that it's a good pickup for the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays look at the Rays, look at the Red Sox, look at the Yankees, look at the Orioles, who may be losing Nelson Cruz and Matt Wieters, and say, this is our shot. We have to take it now because we can win this division. And quite frankly, any team in that division can win that division right now. That division is not stellar whatsoever. It may be the worst AL East in 20 years, if not more. So, yeah, they're going for a shot. It's a five-year deal. Yes, he's a catcher. Yes, he's an athletic catcher. But Pudge Rodriguez lasted until he was 36.
He took a lot of PEDs to make him feel better, to keep him healthy.
Fair.
But I find it hard to fathom just as – and I guess the Rogers, as you said, the Rogers Center money, the Toronto money does come into play a bit. But I find it very difficult to swallow the idea of an above average player receiving $16 million a year on a contract where he very well may not be, you know, as you said, he has less wear and tear than many catchers do. But very few of them. And there are exceptions, obviously, Carlton Fisk, Pudge Rodriguez, I'm sure, and there are a few others I can't think of off the top of my head that have been able to remain as a catcher through their mid-30s. Most of them haven't. And the idea of paying, as I said, above average player $16 million a year to play a position he may not be able to play 3 years from now. I get the overpay. I just, especially with Navarro in the back. Although I think he started his career being traded for Randy Johnson, if I remember correctly. I think he was one of the prospects in one of the Randy Johnson trades.
No, he wasn't. It was Carlos Guillen, John Halama, and Freddie Garcia. Dionne Navarro came, maybe you're right, but he came, You mean the trade to the Diamondbacks from the Yankees?
Yes. Yeah.
That may have been. Okay, go on. Sorry, I was going the other way. I was going the Houston and Seattle trade. Go on, I'm sorry. You may be right. I will look that up, and I will be mildly impressed if you are correct.
Yarno Navarro was traded, I just looked it up, with Javier Vasquez and Brett Halsey for Randy Johnson. Bam!
And Brett Halsey actually passed away last week.
Yes, he did. I just find it hard to fathom $16 million for an above-average player. I understand the need to overpay, but at the position where I don't think he'll be there in 5 years, it's a lot.
Well, the other thing that you have to understand is that there are no – the reason you overpay is because there are no catchers left. Like the Cubs – the Pirates got Francisco Cervelli, which is a great trade for them. Because it seems like there's a pipeline from the Yankees to the Pirates as far as catchers. First it's Martin, now it's Cervelli. Chris Stewart came. But other than Martin, your next best catcher is Nick Hundley. And after that is A.J. Pierzynski. So,
is that Todd Hundley's kid?
I don't think so. I think it's his nephew.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. But anyway, there are no other catchers. Okay, the third deal of the day.
And this one was the... Sorry, please. This one was the most interesting to me. Jason Hayward, the player we've all been waiting for to become that truly great player, one of the most hyped prospects for many years, and never really hit that level. Solid defensive player, good outfielder, good hitter, not a great hitter. Traded along with Jordan Walden, which I think one of their bigger prospects. Traded for Shelby Miller and Terrell Jenkins. Obviously, Shelby Miller and Hayward are the big names. St. Louis had this actually makes a lot of sense. You know, again, you're more of a baseball expert than I am, but St. Louis always seems to have pitching prospects. And with the death of Oscar Tavares, who apparently was five times over the legal limit, which is unfathomable, they need their need of an outfield. This seems logical. My question is, did the Cardinals give up too much? Because I believe they only have Hayward for another year before he's in free agency.
Correct. So the Cardinals have Hayward for one more year, and then they'll probably give him the offer where they can get a first-round pick in case he's signed, which he would be. So they'd give him that $15.3 million offer. So it could be a two-year deal for them. And if he does get signed, then they get a first-round pick, which was the extent of that second prospect, Tyrell Jenkins, who was the Cardinals' first-round pick last year. So let's say that it's Waltham, who got traded from the Angels to the Braves a couple of years ago, and Hayward for Duncan. Jenkins is a soft tosser, but has pitched very well. Duncan has struggled. And then the last couple of months had a great second half of the year, but can he continue? Because he doesn't strike out many people either. Hayward is one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball. His defensive WAR is off the charts. In fact, he may be the best defensive outfielder outside of Mike Trout in baseball. So they're going to slot him in right field. He used to play center, so he plays with that type of aggressiveness and that type of versatility. So he's got a great cannon arm coming in from right. The Cardinals always seem to pick up players where they can adjust to the Cardinal, what you would say the Cardinal way is, I guess, in that they bring out the best in those players and those players want to stay. It's an interesting trade for the Cardinals. In fact, I really like the trade for the Cardinals. As a Mets fan, I love the trade for the Braves. Because to me, this signals them putting up that white flag. Even John Hart last week, when he came and became the general manager, said, we're going to be rebuilding. It's going to take 2 or 3 years. And Sean, as a Mets fan, just jumps up for joy and goes, yay, with them and the Phillies and now the Marlins, we got a shot, at least at the playoffs. but definitely not the Nationals. So, interesting trade from both sides. I see the reasoning for both. The Braves get 10 years of controlled contracts, and the Cardinals get their right fielder. The Cardinals are in a win-now team, as they should be. They have probably the most talent outside of the Dodgers in baseball.
20 minutes talking baseball, free agency.
Talking baseball.
I love The Simpsons.
Okay.
What'd you say?
That was not The Simpsons I was saying.
It was from The Simpsons baseball episode.
Oh, well, it was also a song before that. It was an actual song. You know that, right?
Oh, I did not know that. I thought it was just from The Simpsons.
It's Terry Cashman's Talking Baseball. So they go, Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Yeah, it's an actual song. So anyway.
Well, I guess that makes sense because it ends up when they sing it on The Simpsons. And if Evan from New York is listening, I know he'll be able to reference the episode. And they talk about how I think Steve Sax is, or Ozzie Smith, you know, does this, and Steve Sax does this, and Jose Canseco falls into another dimension. Of course, he now has lost a finger, unfortunately, which fell off again while playing poker this weekend. But that's neither here nor there. So to jump from there to the college football world, as you brought up, number one Mississippi State goes down in a... Mickey and the Duke. Anyway, and on that note, Mississippi State, the number one team in the country, goes down, losing a not as close as the scoreboard indicated 25-20 decision to Alabama. Number six, Arizona State, goes down at Oregon State. TCU almost lets up the most embarrassing loss of the last 10 years. Melvin Gordon rushes for a record in three quarters. Will Duschamp is fired at Florida. An interesting week in college football, to say the least.
Bye-bye, Willie. Bye-bye, Willie. Bye-bye, Willie. Florida can't wait to let you go. Bye-bye, Willie. Bye-bye, Willie. Bye-bye, Willie. Florida can't wait to let you go.
Oh, and there's going to be a lot out there. This is a prestigious job. There are a lot of coordinators that are going to be from the NFL that will be interested. There's a couple obvious thoughts. Bob Stoops. Probably not Charlie Strong at Texas. But what's his name? Dan Mullen, who's coaching Mississippi State currently. You know, do you bring back the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, from South Carolina? Although I don't see that happening. It's a prestigious position. And this is a team that has gone 27-20 over the last 4 years. So I don't think there's any real decision. My question is this. Jeremy Foley is probably the most one of the most powerful athletic directors in the country. You agree with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think him and the guy from Kentucky.
Tom Jurich from Louisville. You're thinking the Kentucky guy or Jurich from Louisville? But here's the thing. Now, he obviously brought in Billy Donovan, almost 20 years ago. It's been an extraordinary success. But since Steve Spurrier left, you have had the Zookster, Ron Zook, not exactly a success. You've had Duschamp, not exactly a success. Is there any chance that he's in trouble? I can't imagine but...
No way. They make way too much money. Sometimes you don't necessarily have to win. I mean, I hate to say it, but athletic departments are businesses. They make way too much money. And
yeah, but they're not. They're not selling out their stadium at this point. And, you know, one of the big issues is they're only going really 50, 60, 70% capacity over the last couple of years. And the buyout will be about $5 or $6 million for just the head coach, and the assistant coaches will be several million as well. What do you see Florida going for? I mean, you had a bad defense. Mike Sample was a defensive coordinator at Texas. Are you looking offense this time?
Absolutely. I don't think you see Spurrier. I definitely don't see Bob Stoops going there. I don't see Rich Rodriguez going there. I think Dan Mullins may. I like Dan Mullins with this job. Presumably if they don't win the national championship this year anyway. That would be my guy. I think it's Dan Mullins' job to lose it. And if he wants it, I think it's his. I don't think there's anybody else. I think the only other guy that would get it over him is if Bob Stoops wanted it, and I don't think he does. So,
and I actually almost see it the opposite way. Mullen did not have a great relationship, out of what I understand, with Foley. He didn't like how he left. He was part of the Urban Meyer crew. You know, Stoops, I think Stoops is stagnated at Oklahoma. The question is the, you know, the money is very good. The family is the family happy kind of thing.
Well,
you know, Stoops,
but also, Seth, he will then have to recruit and play every year against his brother, who is the coach of Kentucky.
Kentucky.
And from reports, and granted, I'm only reading, when he played Kentucky a couple of years ago, or he played Florida a couple of years ago in the bowl game, he agonized over that game. Agonized over it. He does not like facing off against his family. So I'm not sure he'd want to do that every year and do that on the recruiting trail every year. I don't think he goes for this job. I would have thought he would have gone for the Texas job before he went for this one.
No, you can't go from Oklahoma to Texas. You just can't. But then I wonder if you're looking at a coordinator, an offensive coordinator from the NFL. Because
or a coach. There are two Harbaughs out there. There's always a Harbaugh to be found.
Yeah, well, we'll see where Harbaugh is the big. The problem with Harbaugh right now is they're going to be doing this probably starting in the next couple weeks, and San Francisco will at a minimum be playing through January, and that's kind of an iffy situation. Nobody knows what to make. I think everyone thinks Harbaugh is gone. Anyone has a clue what he wants. Does he want to go to the Raiders? Does he want to go back to college? Does he want another NFL job? I don't think anyone has any idea. Does he resign with the Niners? Although I doubt it. The problem is because they want an offensive guy, the coach that would actually come, the coordinator that would come to mind doesn't fit, which would be Dan Quinn, who was the defensive coordinator at Florida several years ago, and is, of course, the coordinator for the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. Now, there are a couple other ones with Florida ties. Does Foley want to go outside of that umbrella? I don't know. But you do know that there will be a million people. You know, Charlie Strong would have been a great candidate a year ago. Does Hugh Freeze want to leave Mississippi? He's a Mississippi guy. I don't know. Do you go for Greg Schiano? Overabundance of people who will be interested in this position. I am very curious to see what would happen. Just out of curiosity, did you see Melvin Gordon's numbers?
I saw them, and I thought about Bo Jackson in my Techno Bowl games.
Yeah, it was worse than that, though. Did you realize he didn't play the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Against a team that was ranked. For those of you who don't know, Melvin Gordon, the running back for University of Wisconsin, who is kind of a peripheral Heisman candidate. He was one of the two or three best running backs in the country coming into this. And he was playing against Nebraska, who have a running back named Abdullah. Couldn't make that one up if I tried. And he decided... And he decided he ran for 408 yards, which broke Damian Tomlinson's record in three quarters. His last carry was the last quarter. It was the last carry of the third quarter. He's given a 500 yard game. Now the question is, does this push him right 1 and 1A with Marcus Mariota of Oregon in the Heisman race?
I can't see it. It's one game. I mean,
yeah, but that's one hell of a, Amir Abdullah. I'm sorry, not Abdul Abdullah, but that is one heck of a game.
There's no Dwayne walking in that door. Yeah, I get it. Which is ironic considering he played for Wisconsin too. So, I get it. It's one game, but then again, Troy Davis had one game too, right?
Troy Davis, who ran for 2,000 yards, he came in second place.
Yeah, but he had one. He didn't win a Heisman. That's what I'm saying. So he had one amazing game that put him into that 2,000 yard category. I think he had like 400 yards in a game. It puts him in the discussion, but I don't think he's anywhere close to winning it.
Well, Wisconsin still has a couple games to go, so we'll see what happens. As I said, Mississippi State goes down to Alabama. Auburn loses their third straight. We're now kind of, you know, the situation that you broached 2 weeks ago is now very interesting. You have Mississippi State coming up. You have Alabama, Auburn coming up. And then you have an SEC title game. You maybe, I don't think so. Well, Mississippi has two losses already. Auburn is now out of the race. LSU is obviously out of the race. Congrats to Brett Bielema for having Arkansas finally win a game in the SEC. You may be looking at a bunch of one of two lost teams. If Auburn beats Alabama, feasible. If Mississippi beats Mississippi State, feasible. You really are in that two-win discussion, the two-loss discussion. And then everything is up in the air. Way to read that one a couple weeks ago, Sean.
I'm so glad to have chaos on my side.
Sean, your life would not be interesting without it.
That's all I was looking for, was a whole bunch of chaos. And you know what? You have said this throughout the entire year. I have said this throughout the entire year. Four teams is just not enough. You're going to have the same chaos that you do with two teams. It doesn't help having four. It just doesn't. So I get what you're saying. I'm glad I was right. And in some ways, I'm not glad I was right. I wish I was wrong. I mean, it's unfortunate that this is what we're going to have. More and more chaos.
Well, before we kind of jump to the question that we were going to talk about, let's talk a little bit of NFL. Fortunately, the Jets have had a week off. Unfortunately, the Giants did not, losing
the
their team. Excuse me?
And the bye won.
The bye did win. The umpteenth straight game. The Giants defensively looked very solid. Unfortunately, when you let up five interceptions? Yeah, five interceptions. You know, that leads to five straight losses, and you're in a, you know, they have him for another 4 years at $80 million, whatever's left. He's had some good games. Whenever he plays against a decent defense, it just gets uglier and uglier for Eli Manning.
Yeah, I got nothing to say. I mean, we've said this many times before. He's not a great quarterback. He's just not.
No.
I mean, he's a good quarterback. He's in that middling avenue of like 10 to 15 in the quarterbacks, maybe even less this year. But he's never going to be a top five quarterback. That's just not who he is. He gets paid like a top five quarterback, but as we saw, Russell Martin's getting paid like a top five player. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, what do you tell your team if you are Chip Kelly today?
I don't know. You thought they were one of the four teams that could go to the Super Bowl, and the team that they lost by 35 to was not. I'm not really sure how to respond to that. You say it was one game.
It's one game. It was played at Lambeau, which I certainly think helps the Packers. No question about it. you're right. I may have underappreciated what the Packers had. I mean, they looked great last night. They were firing on every cylinder. But the one thing the Packers have had this year that that very few teams have is complete and total health. Nobody on that team, aside from Josh Sitton, who actually is still playing, and Beluga, has gotten hurt. And I think that there's something to be said for getting lucky with your health. So far, so good for them. But it's just a matter of, does the health continue? I mean, you saw a team last night with the Eagles that was pretty much decimated with health problems. They've been decimated all year with health problems. You have the Cowboys that have a Romo injury. I mean, each team, you look at the Broncos yesterday, they didn't get out of the first half without losing a couple of guys, and then our boy Emmanuel Sanders comes down with a concussion in the third quarter. Now, lucky for us, we do have other wide receivers, so we'll play next week if he cannot. But the Broncos do not. They lose Julian Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. They've lost Ronnie Hillman. I mean, injuries sometimes take a toll, and you can say for Green Bay, they've gotten very lucky with injuries this year. They just haven't been hit.
Yeah, and Denver goes down in a strange surprise, in a pretty shocking game that would have hurt anyone in a survivor pool. Goes down at St. Louis 23-7. Of course, my survivor pool gets knocked out when the Saints somehow revert back to the Saints of 2013. How bad is this NFC South? How are the Falcons 3-7? And I believe,
no,
or a game out of first, they're 4-7 and a game out of first place, or tied for first.
No, they're 4-6 and they're in first place.
This is brutal.
Well, you know, you're gonna get a 7-9 team hosting a 10-6 team in the playoffs. The Packers or Lions are gonna have to go to either New Orleans or to Atlanta. But when you have three divisions, that's the way the world works. I've never liked the three-division game to begin with. Still don't. I think it's horrendous. I think it takes away from the divisional rivalries because you only have three teams while you could have had four or five. And
I'm confused, dude. There's four divisions in each side.
I'm sorry. Four divisions instead of three. I'm sorry. Four divisions instead of three. I'd like the three divisions. I always did, the Central, the North, and the South. And here you are having a 7-9 team probably making the playoffs. And the only reason that the Falcons are in first place is because they are 4-0 in their division and 0-6 out of it.
It's just ugly. And to try and figure out Cincinnati is impossible. Tampa Bay goes on the road, but as bad as this division is, Tampa Bay goes on the road and beats Washington by 20. They're 2-8, and they go to Washington and win by 20. Did you see the Brian Mitchell video?
I haven't seen the video, but I did hear the audio. I think that was enough.
For those of you listening in the New York area, compare it to the Ray Lucas Jets audio of a couple of years past. That entertaining.
And Brian Mitchell, and the difference is, though, like Ray Lucas was, he was a Jet. He played a couple of years. Brian Mitchell was Mr. Redskin when he was on that team. I mean, he still is in the area. So when he says something, people, he's like Ian Hutton. When he talks, people listen. But he went off on that team. I mean, he basically said, they suck. And you know what? He's right.
Guess what?
They do. Okay, so we got about 20 minutes left, and we do want to touch upon what Mr. Lipton had asked us about. So, and I think it's apropos that Seth's being asked this question, because we all know what type of basketball fan Seth is. He's a Utah Jazz fan. So,
I've gone over the decades. I've gone from the New Jersey Nets to the Portland Trailblazers, to the Sacramento Kings, back to the Nets, to the Milwaukee Bucks, to the Utah Jazz. And what team am I this year? You want to just assign me a team?
You're the Nuggets. You're at the Nuggets.
Oh, the Nuggets team this year. So pretty much what this is, yeah, it has not been the easiest road. Let's put it that way. I still do root for the Nets. You know, the question is, you know, when is it right to stop following your team? When do you give up on your team?
Let's give some pretext here. So Mr. Lipton used to live in Brooklyn. He moved to Syracuse, and now he's back in Staten Island, but he's saying before he left, there was no Brooklyn team. So he was a Knicks fan. Now that he's back, he doesn't like the Knicks, but he's stating, oh, well, I'm a Brooklyn fan. Is it okay for me to root for the Nets? And when is it okay for me to give up on my team, which is the Knicks, considering I don't like them anyway? And we've gotten a bunch of people asking this question because obviously the Knicks are not a fun team to watch right now. In fact, they're actually a nauseating team to watch as they develop the triangle offense and defense, which means no defense and really no offense. And if you don't like watching the team, can you still be a fan? So people have said, I don't like watching the Knicks. Some people have said, I can't be a Mets fan anymore. So when can you give up on your team and go elsewhere? And to what team do you go? And I said on the posting, well, you can have a poll and ask everybody else who you should be because it's worked so well for my esteemed co-host. So, Mr. Lipton, we invite you to call in or anybody else, 760-283-0846. I am definitely not one to ask this question because I've gone 30 years without a championship and haven't given up on my team.
And, well, you've given up on your team, but you still just go through the motion. You love your teams and you follow them wholeheartedly, but you're not under the impression that you're, in a lot of ways, do you see the Jets winning a Super Bowl in the next 5 years?
No, but I don't give up on them. I've gone to 3 Jets games this year, which is more Jets games I've gone to any other year. So it's not as if I'm giving up. I still go to the bar and watch the game. Even though I know, you know what, they got a shot at winning this game, but it's not a very good shot. I've missed one game in the past 10 years in totality, and I was in India. I think that's allowed.
I think there have to be discerning circumstances in a lot of ways to give up on a team that you loved from childhood on. I'm a Jersey boy. We all know this. And I rooted for the Nets from when I was 6 years old. Yeah, I rooted for Portland with Drexler because he was my favorite player. I rooted for Mitch Richmond with the Kings. But I've been a Nets fan forever and a day. When they moved to Brooklyn, they ceased to be a New Jersey team to me. And even though I live in the city, I am a Jersey boy at heart. Do I root for them? Yeah. There's no anger towards them because they're still as close to a team as I'm ever going to root for. It's ever going to be a home team to me. I can never root for the Knicks. It would just be terrible. But, if I was a Knicks fan for the last 25 years, and I've seen over the last 10 years what's happened, how this organization has been run, which has been disastrous, I think is a fair way to put it. You're a Mets fan. You've seen in the last 5, 6, 7 years what would have happened with the Wilpons and this gone from, a franchise that went to the World Series in 2000 and was a Carlos Beltran failed to swing on a strike 3 pitch going 6 or 7 years ago. And you've seen, it's not the individual players, it's the organization as a whole. The Stefan Marbury's, the Eddie Curry's, the stupid trades, the trading of Zach Randolph, this, that, the other thing. James Dolan doing this, Isaiah Thomas doing this. It's very difficult to maintain a real fandom, I think, when you deal with that on a day-to-day basis, especially in a media area such as New York, where it's thrown in your face by 9 newspapers and 3 radio shows, 3 radio stations. I think it's hard. Losing, I think, is acceptable. Losing is not an acceptable reason to jump. But the peripheral stuff that comes with it, I think, does make it reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm ever going to give up on my teams. Look, if the Islanders had moved to Kansas City, would I have ceased being, well, first of all, they wouldn't be called the Islanders because Kansas City is not an island. But let's just, well, then again, there's no Jazz in Utah and there's no Lakes in L.A., so you never really know what's going on. But there are Pelicans in New Orleans. So you don't really know what the team's going to be called. But I have to think that if they had moved to Kansas City, I would have stopped being whatever that team name would have been. I think that was more of a regional concept for me. Would I become a Ranger fan? Yeah, right. That would have been the equivalent of me becoming a Georgetown basketball fan, which would have been zero. Would I become a Devil fan? That probably would have been the equivalent of me becoming a UConn basketball fan, which probably would have been zero. But I would have picked up another team because I do like watching hockey. So I probably would have picked up, I was going to say the Hartford Whalers, but they're no longer in existence either. So I probably would have picked up another team, maybe the Oilers or something like that. But that's not giving up on my team. That's them actually giving up on me. Right? I mean, Seth, you lived through this. Do you feel that the Nets gave up on Jersey by moving?
And the problem is the Nets were never drawing in Jersey. So while I hated that they moved to Brooklyn, you know, even when they were in an ancient arena and they didn't draw, even when the team went to the back-to-back NBA Finals in 02 and 03, you very rarely saw were there sellouts. It was, you didn't have a great draw. You remember in New Jersey, when you almost have to cut off Central Jersey and South from there, because they're all Philly fans. And a lot of Northern New Jersey are Knicks fans. So they never really had a fan base to themselves. You know, Long Island, you know, people, you know, when they were the Long Island Nets, nobody really, you know, that was before both of our times. So at least going to Brooklyn, they're establishing a fan base. And, you know, for people who are from Brooklyn, this concept, you know, this happens. I mean, not this happens, I take that back. But for people that, you know, an adopted home team, you know, people pick it up. You know, think about, use your hockey reference. You know, there was a team in Atlanta. They do nothing. They go to Winnipeg. Now, Winnipeg, you know, in Canada, in the western part of Canada, you have Calgary and Edmonton and Vancouver. And I'm sure Winnipeg was split in a lot of ways through those three teams. But when Winnipeg came back and got a team back again, they all kind of subscribed back to the Winnipeg. You know, I think it's the same thing. And, you know, to me, if you move to a city or to a borough, I think you have every right to pick up that, to become a fan of that borough, to become a fan of the team in the borough or city where you're living, even if it goes against where your home team was before.
Are you allowed to disassociate yourself from the team that you grew up
with? I don't think you can unless there's a reason for it. You know, and that's why what makes the Nets Knicks thing a little bit difficult. Because to me, the Knicks have given ample reason to disassociate from them over the last 10 years. Their tickets are the most expensive in the NFL. It's been run like a freaking disaster. The team has been a joke for the lack of, you know, they may have made the play, you know, they made the playoffs in 12 and had a good year. But no one is, they've been seen more as an abomination, kind of a laughingstock. And you're a Knicks fan. I don't, you know, maybe you see it differently than I do. But over the last decade, was that primarily how you would see this team?
Yeah. I mean, look, they've given every reason. Look, when Donnie Walsh came, my brother, who was a Knick fan, Donnie Walsh said, give me 2 years. Give me 2 years to clean up this mess. We'll be good to go when LeBron comes out again. And who knows, right? And he did exactly what he said. He gave a two-year plan, and my brother was under the impression that after 2 years, the ship would have been written. Would have been right.
Righted. Would have been righted.
Right. Yeah. And then you would have moved on from there. And if you're a Knicks fan, you listen to Donnie Walsh, because Donnie Walsh is Donnie Walsh. Great. 2 years. We have all this money. We have cap room. We have everything under the sun. He says, don't go out and get Carmelo in the trade, because if you do, you're going to give up much more than if Kane's a free agent. Boom, boom, boom. Donnie Walsh is right. Donnie Walsh is the man. We give him 2 years, and then what does James Dolan do? He jumps right over Donnie Walsh. He goes and gives the farm for Carmelo, and we lose all our assets, and here we are again. So, yeah, they've given me every reason in the world not to be a Knicks fan, and yet I'm still here. The Islanders are a better situation, who have given me every reason and then 75 more not to be an Islander fan. Start with the Gordon's Fisherman uniforms. End with the Gordon's Fisherman uniforms, because they're going to bring those back this year for a couple of games. God help us. Anyway. Yeah, it's kind of hard. I mean, it's kind of hard to stay a fan. But you know what? At the same time, I grew up with these teams. I did move to Boston. I became a Red Sox fan for a little bit. You would never see me become a Patriots fan. Jets fans, relax. Not going to be a Patriots fan. Did become a Red Sox fan for a little bit. Liked watching the Bruins play. Liked watching the Celtics play. Even though that's kind of, I guess, taboo coming from a Knicks fan. But did enjoy watching them play. You can be associated with the teams, with the city that you're in. But I think it's very hard to give up, because you've suffered so long with the teams that you grew up with, to just give them up. I don't think I ever could, no matter where I lived.
If anyone, I guess since most of the people are listening, I don't think most of the people who listen know this. And probably 80 to 90% of the people who listen to the show are listening on the archive off of backsportspage.com. There is, unfortunately, no call-ins to discuss it, but I'd like to talk about this a little bit more, and even maybe at another time in the show. We should mention, it was 6.5 minutes ago, but one thing we didn't discuss last week that we're going to discuss, we said we would talk about today. I don't know, it's not really off the top of my head, it is off the top of my head, but is our college basketball preseason All-Americans. Sean, you want to go with it? Or?
I think we deserve another week. I think we need a little bit more time to talk, because there will be no Syracuse player on that team.
None. That is true.
So we got about 5 minutes left. So let me go first. Mine's a little long today. So then we can go. So the first thing is, shout out to all those players, and I say players because we are players. So to the Syracuse alumni basketball band, who last weekend showed up for our first practice for some of us in 15, 16 years. And I wasn't really good when I played 15, 16 years ago, so you can only imagine what I'm like now without having to pick out my horn. But on Thursday and Friday of this week...
Nobody wants to see you take out your horn.
All righty then. Anyway. My trombone with the slide. Anyway, so this week we play, Syracuse plays in the Y2K Classic at Madison Square Garden on Thursday and Friday. So if you are watching the game on, I believe it's on ESPN, you may be able to see me. I will be the one with the blue and orange trombone in the front row. So when they actually hand pass the band, I will be there with all my glory. And it's a good thing. I mean, it's cool to relive a little bit of your youth, a little bit of your history, and go back to college a little bit. Okay, number two, and I only get two. Zach Hoskins, you officially are my hero. Seth, do you have any idea who this guy is?
Mike Hopkins' brother?
No. Zach Hoskins is a one-handed basketball player.
I did hear about this.
He suited up for Florida this past week. He is a walk-on. I remember watching him a little bit on SportsCenter last year in high school. You know, this kid did something that Seth and I could only dream of, is playing NCAA basketball when we were actually eligible. Although I think I still remain eligible. I'm still short. I'm still white. I'm still Jewish. I'm not playing anyway. That's why I play a trombone.
But, you forgot you still can't shoot.
Ah, that too. Excellent. So the one-handed basketball player, Zach Hoskins, made his debut for Florida this past week. Congratulations to him. And I'd be remiss by not saying congratulations. I don't remember this kid's name. So Seth, help me out. The guy that suited up for Michigan this week, whose father passed away in a plane. He survived two plane crashes. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I did hear, okay. It rings a bell, but I don't know specifically. It rings a bell.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Well, I'm going to look that up. I know that his father, when he was younger, his mother passed away in the first plane crash with his sister. And then his father passed away in the second plane crash. You're kind of going, oh, here it is, Austin Hatch. So double plane crash survivor Austin Hatch suited up for Michigan, sunk a free throw Monday night, a week ago today. Congratulations to Hatch. Congratulations to Hoskins. Those are the reasons why we watch sports. It's not for the $25 million player, Giancarlo Stanton. Although, you know what? If you played for the Mets, I'd watch him there too. No lie. Okay, Seth, you're up.
Okay. Couple quick congrats. Kevin Harwick winning the first Sprint Cup, the revised Sprint Cup Championship. What a weird, weird way for NASCAR to run. Fabricio Werdum winning the heavyweight championship in the UFC, although obviously it's at an interim level. And from the really good to the really bad, Todd Gurley, probably the best running back in college football, was suspended for four games for receiving money for his signature, God forbid, for George's game against Auburn, and promptly tears his ACL. He'll need surgery. He's out for the season. And similarly, almost to Marcus Lattimore, who was forced to retire from the Niners last week, he'll go from a probable first-round pick to somewhere in the second, third round. There are certain NCAA rules that people agree with. There are certain that they don't. $30 million for a guy who really, this is someone who grew up in a mobile home. He would probably have gone pro. His mother's trailer needs a roof. They have no porch. This is where sometimes you have to use common sense. This is in regards to the suspension. Yes, he broke it. He broke the rules, but there are mitigating circumstances, and these should be this should come into play. And it's just a real shame for a really supposedly really class act kind of a player that. His career may end on this note, and I wish him the best. Unfortunately, that's all I have. So for Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens, Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show on BackSportsPage.com, Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
See you.